You're listening to Star Wars Beyond the Films, the official expanded universe podcast of StarWarsReport.com.
There is a great disturbance in the Force.
Welcome to episode 18 of Star Wars Beyond the Films, your Star Wars discussion podcast. I'm one of your hosts, the defender of the EU, Mark Herleman. And with me, like a bad case of Ableth possession, the EU guru himself, Nathan B. Butler!
Ooh, I feel all tentacly, if that's even a word now.
Also with us this week, straight out of Cali, fresh from We Talk Clones, you may know him from EU Cantina, writing reviews, my homeboy in arms, William Devereaux.
Hello guys, how are you doing? Thanks for having me on.
Doing real good. I mean, you know, how you guys been this last week? You guys been excited? I read anything good lately? I mean, you know, I'm just still working on Apocalypse, trying to get through it, but...
Good games, good books, lots of stuff.
Yeah, I gotta say, good Star Wars gaming, though I was very skeptical, and yeah, a good book, which I was also very skeptical about, which I guess we'll have to touch on here in a moment, as I must bow to eat my own words. Now, folks, speaking of eating my own words, one of the places you can hear a lot of stuff that we say, when the opinions that we give outside of just the show itself, and a place where you can give your own opinions, is on our Facebook and Twitter accounts. Okay, so you can listen to the show on StarWarsReport.com. You can listen to the show on Middle Earth Network Radio, get it on iTunes and such, as well as just listening straight off of our Facebook page. The Facebook page for us is facebook.com/SWBeyondFilms. We, of course, also have the Twitter at SWBeyondFilms. Very easy to recall for both of those. So pop on over to either one, follow us on Twitter, or like us on Facebook. Interact with us. Post your comments while you listen to the show so that you can be heard on the things that we're talking about each week. You can also, of course, email us. It's beyondthefilms@starwarsfanworks.com. And I'd be remiss, I didn't take a second to mention something that is near and dear to my heart. I have just relaunched NathanPButler.com, which is now a place you can finally find all the stuff that I've written instead of it being just like a glorified menu system and such. So if you're interested in those Wars novellas or my brand new, newly re-released, revised and expanded edition of Greater Good, that sci-fi time travel novel where the time-traveling hero and villain are telepaths and telekinetics, very cool story, I'm very proud of that one. Check out NathanPButler.com. You'll find some links over there to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and stuff where you can actually find that story to pick up. And if you do pick it up, be sure to let me know what you think or let us know on the Facebook page, me and my author page. It's facebook.com/NathanPButlerAuthor if you want to check that one out. I'd very much welcome your feedback. And, of course, we together, collectively, would very much welcome your feedback on the show because we'll be putting out those feedback episodes each month when your feedback justifies it. So the more feedback we get, the more likely it is you'll hear yourself here on the show.
Here at Star Wars Beyond the Films, we ask the tough questions. Questions that have bothered you a long time. Or simple ones that have perplexed you off and on. I mean, you know, it happens to all of us. You ponder about Star Wars, so do we. This episode, we explore Star Wars gaming and the potential of motion-controlled Star Wars games. Can they tell EU stories? And so forth. With that in mind, hold on to your crash webbing, because here we go!
And speaking of crashes, we talked about this before the show, that there couldn't have been a better way to put it. I must eat my own words, folks, on two items from the episode that actually aired most recently as we're recording this, the one that actually was released on April 18th, episode number 16. I believe I recall saying that I didn't care about Scourge because I didn't care about the character and it was an unknown story. Turns out, it's not an unknown story. It's a story that's essentially adapting an old RPG book from Wizards of the Coast entitled Tempest Feud. And I gotta say, never did know anything about the characters going into it, never really cared much for the story, even though it was pre-existing. It is an adaptation, which is a little weird, but Grubb wrote the original story, so it makes sense. I do have to say, though, as a standalone Star Wars story, going right along with our ideas from episode 16 about can you make Star Wars stories that are going to be engaging and bring in new readers that don't use the big three characters or film characters, I gotta say, this was a really good book. The character sounds like he's going to be all wishy-washy based on the cover. He's not. Don't let it throw you off and make you think this is Jaden Core in Cross Current all over again. It is a very good book, some great twists and turns that I did not expect. I really enjoyed it, though it was kind of slow starting. Once I got to about halfway, it really felt like it was building up a lot of steam, really came to a very good ending. And I gotta say, for a librarian, basically, Mander Zuma, the main Jedi character in that story, pulls two really, really cool lightsaber moves in that book that I'm shocked that nobody has ever tried before. Really, really good stuff. The second mea culpa I gotta make, or the second I'm eating my own words moment here, I guess mea culpa is not exactly the right word for it, is Kinect Star Wars. I believe in that same episode it was something along the lines of, you're in the Empire today, burn it. You know, there are elements of that that would say burn it, and yes, the reviewers seem to all tend to agree on that point. But I gotta say, having taken the plunge, picked up that limited edition Star Wars Xbox 360 console, and played Kinect Star Wars with the help, in many cases, of William here, helping me so much in getting used to the Xbox 360, the ins and outs of it, the ins and outs of setting up the Kinect and everything, I gotta say, as goofy as it is, it's not going to be up there with The Force Unleashed, but I'm having a lot of fun with Kinect Star Wars. If you can get your Kinect set up just right so that it's picking you up exactly the way it's supposed to, it's a fun game. And we're going to get into the potential of it and how it works here on the show. I just wanted to get those out there since it is me sort of having to go back on what I said before. And I did want to thank William for all the help with the Xbox.
Well, you're very welcome. I'm glad you've been enjoying it. And I definitely agree with those sentiments, both on Scourge. I'm about 40 pages from the end, and Kinect Star Wars. I'm excited to talk about them.
Nice. You guys are lucky, man. I've yet to get more than the books on occasion from EU Cantina when I was reviewing them there, like Darth Plagueis. You can go and check that out over at EUCantina.net. You know, it's one of those things when it comes to motion control games. When I got my Wii, I played The Force Unleashed, both 1 and 2. And I had to admit, it was fun. But I'm from the school of old school gamers. I like to sit on my hind end and work my thumbs and my thumbs alone. And I have a hard time in that regard with most of the way the motion control games do both. I mean, not many of them do both, really. I mean, they usually just do the motion control. So I don't have these new systems, and I don't really have a burning desire to go out and sweat to the Star Wars, but, you know, it sounds fun.
Don't worry, Mark. I mean, they're definitely not trying to replace controllers with motion controls, your traditional controller. It's more of a compliment, I guess. Some games will have it, some games won't. But trust me, I love traditional, you know, controller-based games, and they're not going anywhere.
Yeah, you know, I guess it would help as we start here, in case you're not familiar with motion-based games, basically what we have is the three major systems, and this is the second generation in which I've actually now owned all three of the Nintendo, Sony, and Microsoft systems. I was a big Microsoft fanboy back in the day, and the previous generation, and now more PS3 with Sony today. But you basically have three different perspectives on this from each company. With the Wii, you essentially have a controller and a nunchuck, so you got a regular sort of wand controller and one that has a stick on it that you hold in your other hand, usually your left hand, and both of those have the ability to track your motion up, down, forward, back, left, right. Are you shaking, that sort of thing? Are you tilting it around? It can pick up the rotation and your movement with its accelerometers. It's not, however, picking you up in exactly real 3D space. It's not like it's visually tracking your movements. It's more like it's tracking the changes that happens in the movement, and it's able to point. It's got the pointer end on it.
Yeah. And it also, its bar, you can set it either above the TV or below the TV. When we had the game, we took the lightsaber adapters, put those on the little wand that you were talking about, and it was like as soon as we put those on, the lightsaber movements were reduced by twice. It was like, what is going on? We ended up playing the game without it on there because it was so hindering to the two-player mode.
Right, I mean, you got to be really kind of careful with the way that you're setting these up. You got to make sure that it's seeing what it needs to see, sensing what it needs to sense. The PlayStation Move is very similar, I guess, to the Wii, except it's sort of like the next level of it. You have essentially a motion controller, which is what you would hold in your main hand, and it's got various buttons on it, just like the Wii remote has various buttons. So there are still buttons that you're using for the gaming. You're just adding in the motion controls. It can do the pointing and such. It can track your movements with the accelerometer, the rotation and such, just like the Wii, especially with Wii Motion Plus on it. The biggest difference when you're using the PlayStation Move is that some games use one, some games use two of those wands, so it's tracking both hands, and some of them are more like the Wii, where you've got the wand in one hand and something with a stick in the other, the navigation controller. But that is using the PlayStation Eye camera to track where you are in 3D space. So, for instance, with the Wii, if you step forward toward the TV or back away from the TV, then it's going to track it the same way as if you're moving forward or backward and you're 3 feet to the left of the TV or to the right of the TV. With the Move, it's going to know whether you're to the left or the right as you're moving forward and backward. It's tracking you a little bit more. The Kinect is a very different piece of hardware, though. The Kinect is tracking essentially a general structure of the human body, where your arms and legs are, and it's following you not only in 3D space, but the essentially the shape you're putting your body in. Are your arms out? Are your arms down? It's much more like one would expect of the old virtual reality stuff you'd see in movies compared to the real virtual reality, where, you know, I lift my arm and the character on the screen is lifting their arm. You can do somewhat, I mean, it's still not quite up there with, you know, the sci-fi movies, but essentially very much an almost one-to-one movement with your body, depending on the game. So it's three different technologies. Kinect is the much more unusual one out of the three, but they're all about trying to let you integrate some motion into the game. I've never seen a game for any of the systems, though, other than the Kinect, that don't use any buttons whatsoever. So Kinect is the only hands-free or the only motion-only style controller in this swath here. Just to give us a level playing field for those who are not particularly versed on what we mean by these motion control options out there.
Right, and each one has its own benefits and drawbacks, of course. For example, it's a little bit harder to do forward and backward movement, like walking on Kinect, because you're in this, you know, limited amount of space in your room. You can't actually walk around. Whereas if you're like using the PlayStation Move, you can actually, you know, use the thumbstick and then kind of represent it. So you're not actually doing the movement, but you do have a wider range of control in there. And so, again, it's the benefits and drawbacks. Of course, Kinect gives you the full body motion, actually swinging a lightsaber, that sort of thing. So
now you're saying you can't go forward and backwards. You remember the old Nintendo, how they had the AB pad that they had, right, where you could do the Olympics, and then you
power pad.
Yeah, the power pad. You lift your feet up off of it for so many seconds and set it down, and that was a jump. Do they have jumping capabilities? How does that work? I mean, you can go up and down, but what about jumping, like say, from like a standing position to a ramp that's forward and above me?
Okay, so, and to clarify, when I say you can't go, like, forward and backward, what I mean is, you know, you can't, like, you can, you know, move your feet in a standalone motion, like you're walking, you can jump forward, that sort of thing, but you can't physically walk forward because you'll run into your TV.
If
you're playing, like, a first-person shooter, like Call of Duty or Halo or something, to use an Xbox example, or even, say, The Force Unleashed, where... you know, you're Starkiller, you're running around, you can't just, you know, turn completely around and have Starkiller walk the other way, because then you can't see the TV, or you can't, you know, there are some limitations due to, you know, you're actually playing on this screen in front of you and you're in a confined space.
So how do you get around that? Is it a button combination?
Well, that's what Kinect Star Wars does, and that's one of the big challenges that people have had to figure out. Do you use your hands to control movement? Kinect Star Wars does it where you kind of like take a step forward and then back up almost, kind of like you can lean forward in the Jedi Destiny mode, that sort of thing.
Have you seen the videos of Kinect Star Wars where essentially you're zooming forward and your arms are kind of out to your side?
Yeah. It reminds me very much of the AY run that you used to have in the Power of the Force or
kind of, yeah,
Jedi power battles.
It's that. You're putting one foot forward, leaning forward, and that in and of itself is essentially a forced dash. But you're not actually technically walking forward or backward. It's more like you're zipping from encounter to encounter. I think a good example of how they can do motion control to address that concern that you brought up about, you know, how do you walk forward and backward, would be a game like, and I know the critics have panned it, but I'm really having fun with it, Rise of Nightmares is a Kinect game. It's essentially you're locked up with a bunch of zombies or some kind of like crazed psycho guy, whatever. It's like the movie Hostel, but taken and mixed in with a little bit of Friday the 13th. But in that case, if you want to move forward, you step one foot forward and you'll be walking forward. If you want to walk faster, you step your foot forward, but you step it farther forward and you'll walk faster. And if you want to turn, like say rotating in a 360-degree type of field of vision like you would with a stick on a game to look left and right if it's first person. In Rise of Nightmares' case, you literally shift your body, and it's the alignment of your shoulders that tells it whether to rotate left and right. So you turn your shoulders like you're rotating slightly to the right, and it'll keep rotating until you shift yourself to look exactly forward again. So there are ways to do it, but it is a very difficult difficult thing to sort of get your head around at first. I certainly had some trouble with it. And I got to say that as much as we can say that there, you know, the controllers are still around, I think Mark does have a point when it comes to the sheer amount of physical exertion. I will tell you, one thing with physical exertion, I'm in the process of playing U-Shape Fitness Evolved 2012. I'm trying to get into an actual training regimen just to kind of get myself – I mean, I'm not out of shape, but I want to get a little bit more toned and stuff and just kind of keep myself healthier as I'm getting up there into my mid-30s.
Hut-like is a shape, man.
Yeah, hut-like is a creepy shape. But now, in the process of playing Just Connect Star Wars, I played a lot of the story mode in one sitting. And I'll tell you, playing a lot of the story mode, that can tire you out, especially when you use a lot of the jumping move. There's a move where essentially, I mean, you can jump when it tells you to jump to move from place to place, but you can also jump in combat to get closer to an attacker, or if you're right up against them, jump to wind up flipping behind them. And I absolutely crucial. I do so much of that that I would tire myself out. People were griping about how in Connect Star Wars, there's all these moments where it kind of takes you out of the action and it does a quick little miniature cutscene to move to the next chunk. Thank goodness for those cutscenes, or I would have collapsed. I'm not out of shape, but it is tiring. So it's definitely not the type of gaming, at least with Connect, that you can do while sitting down. The other ones you can do while sitting down, but Connect, not so much. It's a much more active type of experience, which I know is not going to appeal to a lot of hardcore gamers. That's part of where people have said, oh, well, it's just for the minigames. It's just for that family stuff. The same kind of criticism that the Wii has gotten for so long.
Well, that was where I was going to go with next. I mean, could you see the KOTOR games, 1 and 2, as they are right now, kind of, you know, in this way? Could you see that type of game working at all? I mean...
there might be... Not as they are now. You'd have to do some significant changes to the way they work based on the interface and lots of other, I'm sure a creative developer could figure out a way to do it, but the problem is many developers try to cram existing gameplay styles into this new technology, and you kind of have to be more creative with it.
Now, William, have you been playing Mass Effect 3?
I have been, yes.
Mass Effect 3, of course, by BioWare, the ones who made KOTOR. And they have integrated some aspects of Kinect functionality into Mass Effect 3, though it's not the core of the gameplay. Now, I have not tried this yet, but that may be answering the type of thing that Mark's thinking about in terms of, could you do a game like that, and maybe not necessarily make it all motion control, but integrate Kinect or Move or something like that somehow. I know that with PlayStation Move and with the Wii, you can very easily integrate something like what we saw with the Force Unleashed 1, especially, I mean, 2 also, but especially Force Unleashed 1 on the Wii, where you've got, you know, force pushes, you take the nunchuck, you thrust it forward, it's a force push. The greatest feeling, albeit kind of cruel, on the Wii was to be able to reach out, pull the trigger to grab somebody, and then you raise your nunchuck up, you raise your left hand up, you lift him up off the ground, and you take it from essentially a thumbs up to a thumbs down position, and as you twist, you snap the character's neck.
Or throw a lightsaber through their chest. Either one. It reminded me of the movie Jump, when you watch the guy use the TK power and he's bouncing him across the room. That was me. I just grab things off the wall and just start bouncing it left and right. I'm just like, yeah! I'm unlimited power!
See, you can integrate it like that. I'm curious, William, how has BioWare integrated Kinect into Mass Effect 3, and is that something that would make sense for them to integrate if they ever were to make another Star Wars console RPG?
So, yeah, actually, I have tried it. I played a significant portion of the game with Kinect. You do make some great points, and I should clarify just to start. When I say Kinect doesn't necessarily work for your traditional game, you got to remember where KOTOR was... There was a lot of control, like in the older public, where you're constantly clicking on things, selecting different actions. Obviously, you'd have to adapt that. Movement controls have to be different. Not to say you couldn't do it, but it would take some a lot of tweaking. Something more like what BioWare has done with Mass Effect 3, you could definitely do, and actually it's a really good experience. So what they've done is there is no motion control in Mass Effect 3, but it does heavily utilize the Kinect sensor. And that's because Kinect also provides voice controls. And it's not just a mic. It actually is able to interpret what you're saying and provide developers with an easy way to tap into that. And so basically the way Kinect works in Mass Effect 3 is let's just say you're in a cutscene, right? And in Mass Effect 3, you have dialogue choices, like in, you know, Knights of the Old Republic, where you can select, you know, one of three or four or five different things you could say. And instead of just tapping that on, hitting that on a controller, and if you're not familiar with Mass Effect, they developed this unique style of dialogue trees in the first game, where basically it gives you a short summary of what your character is going to say, not the exact text. So, you know, you might select sure, or you know, come with me, and he'll say, okay guys, let's go, you know, they'll change it anyway.
Oh, nice.
Right, so it's you know, they basically give you the gist of what you're going to say in a shorter space, but
like an emotional direction, essentially.
Right, exactly. And so with Kinect, instead of just, you know, on your controller going over there and hitting A, or, you know, cross if you're on PlayStation, with Kinect you can actually say, you know, come on, and then he'll say, okay, come on guys, let's go. And you know, it'll, you can actually speak the dialogue options, and then it'll recognize that and say it in the game. And so it's basically like you're talking to them. Yeah, the main character does repeat the dialogue in the extended version. And that's because there is a longer dialogue, and you don't really want to sit there and read this long dialogue tree. And so I get the methodology behind that. But it is really cool. It's really immersive because you're sitting there and you're, you know, a lot of times people will set down the controller during a cutscene, and you can't really do that with a game where you're constantly, you know, speaking with people. But I was actually able to set my controller down, you know, sit back and just speak to my Xbox and speak to the game as if I was actually having a conversation with these characters. And that was really cool. And then when you're in combat, you can actually say something like, you know, Liara Stasis, or Jacob Carnage, or whatever. And they'll actually go do that power. You can say shotgun, and your character will pull out a shotgun, or, you know, assault rifle, and pull out the assault rifle.
Do the chopper.
You can say, you know, quick save, and you don't even have to start. You do not have to preface it with Xbox and then the command. You can even mess up. You can say quick save, and it'll still recognize it, or quick save. And so, like, the way they've done it is really impressive, and really, it almost always gets it right.
You see, I would be concerned that it's programmed to recognize swearing. So in the middle of a fight, it would start picking up what I'm saying, and, you know, the character would just commit suicide or something. That's what I'd be afraid of.
No, it's
the
not.
S-word! But the S-word! It means automatic restart!
No, it's actually really good, but they did actually program it so that, like I said, there's one power called Carnage. And instead of saying, you know, Carnage, you can actually say Carnage, and it will recognize it. So they've done a lot of great work with that. You can say open door, or, you know, pick up items. So all these different interaction commands you can say. So when you're talking to people, right, or interacting with the environment, or issuing squad commands, you know, go there, whatever, that can all be done with your voice. And so you're in Mass Effect, you're constantly hitting, we're not really the Mass Effect podcast, but in Mass Effect, you're constantly, you know, pressing the bumpers on the controller to open up the command wheel to use a special power, to order one of your squad mates to use a power or a weapon. And you don't have to touch that at all if you have Kinect. So to answer your question, yes, that's definitely something that can be integrated into a lot more games. And that's happening more and more. One really big, high-profile upcoming game is Steel Battalion Heavy Armor, and a lot of critics have been very excited about this game. And they say it's the best game that integrates both controller and Kinect seamlessly. So you're sitting there with your controller, but you're able to do stuff with Kinect, not just shouting commands, but also motion stuff. And I'm really excited to check that out for myself, and that's supposed to be coming out in a couple months.
That gives me hope. I mean, you know, I mentioned KOTOR 1 and 2 kind of as a good example of the type of gameplay I'm talking about. And that gives me hope because I was thinking, you know, the way Star Wars Connect works looks like when you're walking around, say, Terrace or Dantooine or something like that. And then I think about, you know, in the KOTOR games, it would pause before you went into your battle. And if you had the you know, voice recognized controls, you could say, you know, tell it what attacks to do and then unpause it with a certain movement or just tell it to unpause and go through it. And I could see that working. And the reason why I use KOTOR as the example, because the other part of the question today is, could this be a good way to do storytelling? And I heard complaints, not mainly, I haven't heard too many, but I've heard a lot of backlash about complaints about the Kinect game and Han Solo being in it and how it didn't take place. And I don't care about that. But I do have interest in the idea of a story-driven game like KOTOR 1 or 2 that is done in this form. It would be an interesting experience to be immersed in the game.
Well, I mean, that kind of depends on, I mean, that's the Han Solo thing for Kinect Star Wars, the idea of, you know, I'm Han Solo, and just all that stuff, which, by the way, is the first song that I actually made my way all the way through because it was too catchy to get out of my head.
That's the problem.
In that case, I mean, that's just kind of like the goofy little mini modes. I think the aspect of being able to tell a good EU story, I think it's less about the control scheme and more about the writing of the game, you know, with Hayden Blackman, for instance, being the guy heading up the storytelling with the Force Unleashed games. Perhaps you had some pretty solid stuff, although you had the arguments, of course, about, you know, well, when did they know about the Death Star and whatnot. I think, though, with this case, I mean, you've got with Kinect Star Wars specifically, the storytelling is okay. I mean, it's nothing to write home about. It's not a spectacular story, but it's a decent enough story. But it winds up clashing a little bit with what we've seen because all of a sudden, in the final battles of the game, the final, I guess, two battles of the game, ooh, all of a sudden there's Delta 7 starfighters before Attack of the Clones, and there's Venator Star Destroyers before Attack of the Clones. Everything else could have fit except that. But that's more of like the choice of how the story was told, not the controls. From a control standpoint, though, imagine how this would be. You said, what about KOTOR? Imagine this for something like Squad Commands. Imagine something like a new Republic Commando game or a new X-Wing Rogue Squadron style game where you're essentially giving your squad commands verbally. I mean, it's the same thing essentially as pressing the button as you've done before, but so many of our protagonist characters in the games don't speak or don't speak outside of the cutscenes and maybe a few little random things that they say. And they just repeat them over and over, like, oh, that's gotta hurt. Oh, that's gotta hurt. Oh, that's gotta hurt. I mean, it gets old after a while. But, you know, integrating stuff like that into it would work. But that's essentially more sound control than it is motion control. Kinect blends the two. With the Wii and with the PlayStation Move, that's more of an aspect that's not really dealt with. I mean, you can use a headset and such with the PlayStation, but you're not using it as commanding anything. So that's outside the box a little.
Could you just imagine, though? I mean, Rogue Two, cover me. And you're sitting there just, you know, pretending like you're flying the X-Wing. And then it gets to, how do they fly the X-Wing? Is it a two-handed grip? Is it a one-handed grip?
Exactly, yeah. And I think I actually enjoyed the way they did the space battles in Kinect Star Wars.
How did that work? Did you have to put your hands out in front? Two hands, one hand? How was there?
Yeah. So imagine you're sitting in the Millennium Falcon, right? And you're gonna grab onto that turbo laser, and you're the two handed grip, and you're looking around, up, down, left, right, you know, with both hands, and then it would automatically fire for you. But I don't see why you couldn't almost like it would get annoying. But if you wanted to like move your hands forward and backward, almost like you're shaking the controls or something. But no, I think the way they did it was quite fun.
Just from the same perspective, the pod racing controls amazingly well. It's probably the best controlled part of the game outside the dancing.
The preview looked good.
Yeah, you put your two hands forward as if you're grabbing the controls for each engine, and as soon as you do that, it recognizes it and starts the race. And then literally as you're zipping along, if you're going to turn in a given direction, you pull back on your hand for whichever side you want to turn into, and it reduces the thrust. Right, you don't tilt.
It's like actually like Anakin's pod, where you're pulling backward and forward on the controls.
Like the arcade game they had, right?
Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah. You boost by throwing both hands forward. The only place where that one has any issues is in order to use one of your, essentially like your Mario Kart-style weapon-type things, or to heal
it. My turtle shell!
Yeah, you put your hand up to do it, like you're waving or telling someone, stop!
But when you do that, been out of control.
The Sebulba
fist. You're out of control.
I have to ask, Nathan, have you tried playing pod racing with the racing line and drive assist off?
I have attempted it. And
it's very difficult.
Yeah, it's very difficult. I mean, it's almost... I'm not sure if it's that you need the assist because the controls are too loose, or that they're so responsive that the slightest movement of your arm, just because of fatigue, can spin you out of control. I mean, it is incredibly...
I think it's the letter later.
Yeah, it's very responsive. But you also have there's levels within the game where you're steering, and in that case, you're actually just leaning into turns. Like you're on a speeder in first person.
Yep.
You shift left, you shift right, and it steers the speeder, and whatever direction it's pointing is where it's going to fire, because it's got essentially a mounted gun that's more or less stationary, and you go that way. So there are a lot of options to use with it, but an X-Wing game, a Republic Commando-style game, something that would give us the chance to utilize that in a more straightforward way. Because I think that's what people were looking for with Kinect Star Wars. People are saying, well, it's not a core gamer game. Well, yeah, you know, it's not made for the core
game. It wasn't designed to be.
But neither was Lightsaber Duels. You know, neither are the Lego Star Wars games in many respects. Neither were, you know, Jedi Alliance, Republic Heroes in many respects. Most Star Wars games outside of The Force Unleashed or The Old Republic, at least in the last, 5 years, give or take, haven't been designed for hardcore gamers. Yeah. That's the complaint I think people have. It's not that Kinect Star Wars, it sucks. It's that it's not for those people who are the ones writing the reviews and visiting the gaming sites all the time, which is, you know, kind of where I am in some respects.
Yeah. Well, you're right. It's one of those mindsets where you kind of have to be in that, don't expect a major, you know, epic story and like The Force Unleashed, you know, with, you know, pristine graphics. Although the graphics are good, very good in some cases and not so good in others. You know, but it's really one of those, I don't know. You kind of have to go in with certain expectations, thinking this game was made for everyone. I can only imagine how much pressure the development team over at Terminal Reality was under to make this game. It's probably arguably one of the most anticipated Kinect games ever.
Well, they had a big enough team to work on it. Those credits run like 20 minutes when you finish the story mode. Good Lord. Oh, yeah.
Where's the exit? Now, you guys have both mentioned a story to the Kinect game here. And that's something, I mean, especially when you were talking about, Nathan, I didn't have a clue that there was actually a story going along. I took it as it's just kind of like the Lego games, and it's just a what if. Didn't really have – I don't know. I didn't put much stock in it. I mean, what is the actual story that's going on in the game?
Well, you've got different mini modes. I mean, so it is essentially a mini game collection in some respects, but there is a story mode. You got the Rancor Rampage, where you're stomping around, which is a little harder to control as far as the walking goes. You got the pod racing. You got the Galactic Dance Off, which is what keeps getting griped about so much, but it's really, really fun and kind of tiring. There's all those mini modes. Yeah, there's mini modes. But there is a dedicated story mode called Jedi Destiny. I actually thought it was Dark Force Rising, thinking, wait a second, what is that? The book name? It's Dark Side Rising. William, why don't you give us a sense of the story here? Because we've both been playing this thing so much.
Sure, yeah. So Jedi Destiny Dark Force Rising basically puts you in the... can't really say in control because you are the player. You basically assume the role of a Jedi Padawan. You go through the tutorial, you know, learning how to use the Force. And you can actually play the entire campaign and actually most of the game in co-op. Not over Xbox Live, but you can play split screen.
So you can easily slap the person you're playing with by accident and say, I was just trying to kill the droid!
Exactly. So you basically go through and you've got your Jedi Master who's kind of training you, and she's going, and it's I wouldn't say it's... it's not super deep in the mythology, but you do see a lot of the, you know, major characters like Yoda, who looks great, Mace, and Obi-Wan, who aren't as accurate, but they all have the...
That's the nicest way of putting it that I've heard. Mace Windu looks like the generic black guy, and they happen to have given him a head shaped like Mr. Potato Head. He looks nothing like he's supposed to look.
He's pretty inaccurate.
Ridiculously bad. Otherwise good character. Yoda's incredible looking.
Oh yeah, he looks like he came straight out of the Clone Wars cartoon. Yeah, if not more realistic, I don't know. Anyway, so you basically go through this. There's what, three different planets, technically four if you can't count the final battle. And you get a variety of missions. So sometimes you'll be swinging your lightsaber fighting. Of course, you can use the Force, you know, kick and punch and jump. You can drive speeders. You can fly your spaceships. You can, you know, sit in a turret and shoot like that, like a turbo laser. A whole lot of different variety, I guess, to the game. And it's a fairly loose story, but you're trying to basically rescue some Jedi Padawans and stop the Separatists from, you know, doing what they do. It's imagine like a little Clone Wars episode, which is not necessarily a super deep story. Maybe like, you know, part something you'd get, you know, midway through the season before you get to the epic three, you know, multi-part arcs. But it's something more like that, where you've got this loose, you know, Clone Wars story. And from what I understand, it actually takes place over the course of 3 years, which
That was what I was going to ask you real fast, was it like mini missions, like Yoda sends you on another mission, you go play a level, you come back, or is it on a mission and it just continues?
Three-year thing doesn't make sense to me. When playing the game, I've heard him say everything from it spans a few years to it's from right after The Phantom Menace all the way up through Attack of the Clones. I mean, it starts sometime after Attack of the Clones. Because the whole idea is that they're setting up these new little Jedi training places on isolated planets because they're trying to get the new generation of Jedi ready to go, given that Darth Maul's appearance revealed that the Sith are still out there. But it seems like the story chapters after the initial training are pretty much one after the next after the next. You know, trainees are kidnapped. They wind up on Felucia, then this, then that. And essentially they're trying to stop this Separatist... It's not really the Separatists. It's sort of the Separatists. The Separatists haven't revealed themselves yet at that point. So it's the Commerce Guild doing something with basically Separatist weapons. Think Hitler and Mussolini providing weapons in the Spanish Civil War prior to the outbreak of World War II, where you're seeing the weapons that are used in the future larger conflict essentially given a test run in this case. It even ties in EU stuff like Trihexalon as a weapon that's involved in the story. But it's bizarre. It's one of those things where like, it felt, I mean, maybe this is just me, but I'm sure William could attest to this one way or the other also. It felt to me like it really sort of fit well within a continuity standpoint until about like the last hour, because then you get all of a sudden here's the Delta 7 starfighters before they should be there. Here's the Venator Star Destroyers before they should be there. Here's a Battle of Coruscant before the actual Battle of Coruscant that we've never heard of before. And you know, in the process, by the way, there's somehow two, the names of the characters when you fight them are Roar and Kern on the little screen, like where it shows their life bar. In the credits, they call them Darth Roar and Darth Kern. And both of these guys are, they look like Dathomiri, Zabrak, Knight Brothers, that are more blue than red, who are using... double-bladed lightsabers. Yeah, they're blue Savage Opress type characters. I don't remember if they ever use the Force when we fight. That I'm not sure. But I do recall that my first initial reaction was, what the crap? It's like that last hour is where it goes, you thought we were sea cannon. Have an in, buddy. Boom.
I
was a little bit surprised by some of the choices. Like you said, namely those two warriors, I guess, for lack of a better word, and some of the inclusion of the ships. So, it's definitely interesting. I think I enjoyed it overall, though. Again, it's not one of those games that you buy for the story, right? It's one of those games where you buy it for the fun. And the story is something you get out of it. That's, I guess, the best way to put it. Because, I mean, a lot of review sites, as we mentioned, have kind of panned the game in many respects, giving it, you know, 5 or 5.5 out of 10. But I mean, it's not a game of the year type of thing, right? It's occasionally a little bit buggy. Not too buggy though. And, you know, it's not perfect, and it's not, you know, the most epic game or so. But I don't know. I don't know about you, Nathan, but I really enjoyed a lot of the game modes, and it's been a lot of fun. Even the controversial Galactic Dance-Off mode. I don't know if you want to get into that at all.
Sure.
I mean, George Lucas's favorite mode of the game, believe it or not.
Well, you know, this is the guy that introduced Jar Jar too.
You say mode. I mean, now is the story, that's just a mode too? I mean, these are all like, is there one mode, I should say, that's really the heart of the game? Or is it like Mario Party where they're all just mini games of equal importance / relevance?
It's a little bit of both. I wouldn't call them mini games. I wouldn't go that far because they are fairly, there's a lot of content to them, I'd say.
It's but, almost like, if I can make the analogy, you're more into the Xbox Live Arcade stuff than I have been. But I play a lot of the PSN downloadable games. It almost feels like it's a bunch of separate games that you'd expect from a downloadable title, where it's more than a mini game, but it's got different levels and different things you can do to unlock new content and that sort of thing. And it's like they put all those together on a disc, and that's Kinect Star Wars.
Like a casino pack.
Kind of, yeah.
Okay, so imagine this. You boot up the game, right? And after, you know, going through the main menu, you're presented with basically a circular listing of game modes. And, of course, you can get into your settings there, and you can use this scanner to unlock additional items and that kind of thing. But you're basically, you get your story mode, Jedi Destiny. You get Rancor Rampage, where, as Nathan said, you basically take the role of a Rancor, and you can stomp around your living room, you know, turn a little bit left, turn a little bit right, smash things. There's all sorts of planets you can go on. You can even stand in the middle of a pod race and smash up pod racers as they fly by you. it's pretty entertaining. Is it perfect? I'd say it's, of the game modes, it's the most difficult to play. But after you play it for a little while, I got used to it. You just kind of like move your legs up and down, kind of like you're stomping and like rah, turning, and the stomping in place kind of makes you move forward. And then there's pod racing, which we discussed, and there's about six tracks, and I forget the exact mode. It's not Jedi Destiny mode, I don't think. Something Destiny. Anyway, that basically lets you go through an entire pod racing career, and there's actually a story to that. So you get a lot of the, you know, old pod racers. It's set 10 years after the Phantom Menace, so around the time of Attack of the Clones.
Nice.
And you have a completely different character than you do in the Jedi Destiny story. And you of course you get to see Watto and a lot of other characters. So that was a lot of fun. And then there's Rancor Rampage, the main story, pod racing. There's, of course, Galactic Dance-Off, which is very controversial.
But fun.
Yes, and that's the thing.
Ridiculously fun, I would say, sadly.
Look, I have to agree with Nathan. I don't really like to dance. I don't. I never dance. I don't really like to play Dance Central, though I'll try it on occasion. But I have to admit, I actually got all the achievements in Galactic Dance-Off before I got all the achievements in any other game mode.
Are nice. You telling Very me you nice. Danced your Han off?
I did.
There you go.
A lot of it was done with other family members. Like, you know, my sister's like, "Oh, let's go play Galactic Dance Off." I'm like, "Sure."
See, you've got those around who will want to dance with you. So far, right. Jody has not. My fiance, instead, she's watched me dance, trying not to laugh as I'm doing the lasso on a hologram girl, the Gwen Stefani Hollaback thing. You don't want to see me or just about anybody play the game. You want to be the one playing the game, because otherwise it's, you almost feel embarrassed for the person who's playing.
Yes, that's very true. But they have 15 songs based on popular music, and most of the time they change the words, but there's a few cases where they don't. As Nathan mentioned, there's I'm Han Solo or Hologram Girl or that sort of thing. The final song is one where we basically have to, there's three different difficulties, and each one is unlocked by getting 4 stars on the previous difficulty. And if you can get 3 stars on the hardest difficulty on all of the songs, you unlock a special Star Wars Celebration 6 themed song. Unfortunately, they didn't change the words, and so it's just the standard, you know, celebration song. But it was one of those things where I had to play Galactic Dance Off until I unlocked that song because I had the Star Wars Celebration 6 logo just, you know, laughing at me right there. Like, ah, you want to see what this is? And I have to admit, I am fairly high up on the leaderboard for I'm Han Solo, as embarrassing as that might be. So.
Right. Now, yeah. Now the other mode, you were struggling for modes there a second ago. I always forget the other mode even exists.
Oh, duels.
Exactly. It is the most underrated, and I got to tell you, it's kind of like, it's kind of a dull mode because you get it within the regular levels and stuff, unless you're really just trying to go fast.
And oh my gosh, is it difficult? I was able to get it down for the most part, but there's one final achievement in that game that's eluding me, and that's defeat Darth Vader with a Jedi Master rating. You have to defeat him in 59 seconds.
Oh,
that's insane. The duels mode, it's almost like paper, insane. Rock, scissors.
Let me put it this way. Nobody has done it yet in the world as of, they may have done it
in the world.
There's nobody on the leaderboard.
No, the top player on the leaderboard was at 1 minute and 2 seconds.
Did you and hear I'm that, in, world? It's a throwdown.
And I'm in eighth place, or no, I'm in fourth place with 1 minute and 19 seconds.
I don't see how you get through playing that long enough to get there, because it's essentially this other mode. It's called Duels of the Fates is what we're talking about here. And essentially it's the enemy you're playing against. It's a mode that you wind up in that's essentially kind of almost like a quick time event thing to a degree, like you get into in, say, The Force Unleashed from time to time. But essentially, in the regular story mode, you're doing regular combat, then every once in a while this happens. Duels of the Fates is just this type of battle, and it's essentially, they've got a blow coming at you from above. Hold your saber up to block it. Wait, it's coming from the left. No, the right. No, down. And you're blocking it just right, or you're parrying it by hitting in the same direction. You do that enough, your sabers clash, or your weapons clash, and there's this little, like, glowing orb that's zipping up and down your saber, and if you hit it, and if at the right time you either kick, headbutt, use the force or whatever, you knock back the other opponent, and then you have the time to attack them and try to cut down their life up to a certain point, grab stuff with the force and slam them in the back with it, stuff like that. And then it gets to a point where your time is up to try it, and it goes back and it's lather, rinse, repeat. And yeah, if that sounds exciting, put it the other way, I say if that sounds exciting, you got problems. But if that sounds a little dull of lather, rinse, repeat, and it seems kind of like a formulaic thing, my description of it is probably more exciting than the mode itself actually is. It's the one mode that drives me crazy because it's tedious to me. But it's still another one of these. They've got the approach they've taken is they want to give you motion controls, but the way they want to do the motion controls is they want to give you a lot of variety. It's very experimental. I mean, think about the Star Wars games we've had with motion controls. I mean, we've had the Lego Star Wars games with very rudimentary motion controls. We had Republic Heroes, at least for the Wii, that gave us motion control to a degree and used the pointer and such. The most use of Star Wars motion controls that we've gotten, since there hasn't been a PlayStation Move Star Wars game yet at all, at least from the standpoint of an actual dedicated game, you look at the best examples, and we've got The Force Unleashed 1 and 2 on the Wii. And in those cases, even the second one, since he has two sabers, it strips down the motion controls quite a bit. So the best example is the first one. And it's a waggle fest, as they say. You're doing a lot of left, right, up, down, you know, swinging your hand all the time to make the character stab. But even then, you're still controlling him with the stick and whatnot. So it's sort of or I guess we could also include lightsaber duels in there, the Clone Wars game. Although that one, the controls feel much looser even in that, and more of a waggle fest, as they call it, than the original The Force Unleashed. So it's not like there's been a lot of times that Star Wars licensees have experimented with motion controls in any broad way. It's always been, for the most part, point at something, which The Force Unleashed 2 and Republic Heroes do, or just go left, right, up, down, just jerk your hand from side to side, and you're going to wind up getting some result. Somehow that song popped in my head when I said side to side. I don't know what song it was, but I'm sure it's probably from some Kinect game somewhere. But, you know, it's one of those things where it's almost as though they're so focused on let's show how we can do a lightsaber duel, which, of course, is what everybody dreams of when they see motion controls, that most of the other companies that have tried it haven't been willing to push the envelope. Kinect Star Wars, I mean, the lightsaber dueling, it works fairly well. I mean, you have the mostly one-to-one connection with your arm in most positions. Granted, you can't hold it with two hands. It's one hand on the saber, the other hand uses your force abilities. But they were willing to branch out beyond what we've seen with other motion control style Star Wars games. Maybe because with Kinect, that's all you can do is motion control. You have no buttons. But they certainly took more risks and more opportunities to see, well, which way can we take this? And in that sense, I think it's a very admirable effort for all those, like, half dozen or 20 or however many companies it was that you have to go through the logos for when you boot up the game in the first place. They've really shown us what can be done, and I'm hoping that it's very much like what we saw with the first generation of, say, Wii games, where now that we know what can be done, now that we've seen experimentation with this game, or if we're talking Kinect, things like Rise of Nightmares and such, that now that we've seen what can be done, let's refine it, let's narrow it, and give it a year, give it 2 years, and assuming Star Wars games are even being made worth a crap by then, because we certainly haven't seen a lot lately that weren't just kiddie games or MMOs, we might be able to see something fantastic, because the kinks are being worked out here. You can't expect greatness from the first generation of a new push, but that doesn't mean you've got to stop. Mark, you were saying that just the other day, when we were recording for the episode about, you know, the series. Is it better to have a series that's multi-author or just two authors together in one book and whatnot? You said the formula that worked was the early New Jedi Order, and because they weren't sure if that was a formula they should go with, they deviated into the 9-book series, and when they saw that that didn't work as well, it sort of caused them to go away from the idea of the longer series anyway. You've got to take your lumps and learn from it and move forward. You can't just stop. Otherwise, you know, you've missed an opportunity. And what was the point of setting down that path in the first place? I'm optimistic about the future of Star Wars motion gaming. And hopefully, my goal there with that miniature tirade was also to open us up a little bit, because we keep talking Kinect Star Wars a lot, to some of the other Star Wars motion-based games that have been out there and some of the other possibilities there are with the other hardware, Move and Wii, as we move into what essentially is a second part. We're going so long on this topic, it's got to be a two-parter, I'm sure. So if you're listening to this out there, this was not planned as a two-parter. But I would say there is a lot of potential. What do you guys see as the potential out there? You know, forget the pitfalls that are there now. What could we see with the level of technology that we have?
Oh, man. You know, just from what you guys have told me, I mean, I have yet to play a Kinect game. I have yet to play a Move game. But from what I've heard and what I've seen on the shelves that you can buy in addition to, I'm impressed with the way technology is moving. You know, you had mentioned an X-Wing game where you're able to talk at your wingman. And I just think it would be awesome to have a game like that, a Republic Commando, where you're running around and using your move or whatever it is and blasting away the troops. You know, a KOTOR-type game where you use elements of each and of would be fun. I mean, for me, KOTOR was so long anyway that I took it in small jaunts, so I could see you doing the moving around here and there and bouncing back and forth. There's a lot of potential here.
Mm-hmm. And Mark, if you're ever in the area, you're welcome to stop by and try it out.
Oh, you know it. That's the first place I'm going. Next time I'll go Cali time. That about wraps up this episode of Star Wars Beyond the Films. Remember, you can find our show at www.starwarsreport.com, as well as our Facebook page, iTunes, Zune, and airing on Middle Earth Network Radio. If you like our show, be sure to drop us a review on iTunes or the Zune Marketplace, or just fire us off an email. You can email us at beyondthefilms@starwarsfanworks.com. And be sure to interact with us on Facebook and Twitter at @SWBeyondFilms. So, once again, this has been Mark Herleman.
And Nathan Butler.
And William Devereaux.
Our awesome special guest. Thanks for listening.
And may the Force be with you.
And don't quote us the odds.